This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in today for Marty Moscowane. Over the next week or so, venues across Philadelphia and South Jersey will showcase sports ranging from wheelchair slalom to trap shooting to quad rugby to basketball as the 34th annual National Veterans Wheelchair Games begin. The Philadelphia team is named Philly Fever, and we have three athletes with us in studio this hour to talk about the games, adaptive sport, equipment, training, and I'm guessing the camaraderie that goes along with competing with and against your fellow veterans. Sonny Wimberly was in the Army and served during the Vietnam War. He was diagnosed with MS in 2006. He competes in, among other things, hand cycling, softball, and nine ball. Welcome, Sonny.
Thank you.
Laura Schwanger served in the Army and at age 24 was also diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. She has won numerous medals in track and field and rowing and is also a Paralympian. Great to have you here, Laura.
Thank you, Mary.
And Sean Johnson was a senior airman in the Air Force. He was paralyzed by gunfire at age 22 at home. His sport includes basketball, shot put, and softball. Welcome, Sean.
Thanks, Mary. Happy to be here.
Oh, we're happy to have you here. Let's get a bit of personal history as we get into the show. Sonny, you served in Vietnam, as we mentioned, and actually suffered a mind blast?
Yes, actually, one of my jobs there as a combat engineer was to seek out any type of mines or whatever, and it was, I guess, a common day for us to either have to probe or whatever. And at the end of a mission, we normally clear things, and while clearing with a roller, actually, we had a blast that came up, and I happened to be on the roller and caught a bit in the back. But it wasn't enough to take me out of service or send me home, but I do remember the burn of a bomb blast.
And eventually, as I mentioned, you developed multiple sclerosis. So how did your life take a turn? What happened to you then?
Well, multiple sclerosis is a very tricky disease for anybody that may be familiar. It affects everyone differently. Of course, there's four types. We all know it as one. There's four different types, and primary progressive is the one that I've contacted and have, and I found out that I wasn't going to walk the same way anymore, which brought me to my time in a wheelchair, which is devastating, to say the least, because you think that maybe your life is over. Well, at some point, I found out there was a whole lot more that I could do. Even though I was a busy workaholic, going everywhere. And I also took walking for granted, like so many people do. But once you find out that you're going to be in a wheelchair, the first thing happens is a height difference. And that's one of the reasons being with so many of my co-eds and the people that I'll be with doing the games, we're all the same height. No one actually looks down on anybody. I mean, you don't feel like they're looking down on you, but...
Do you feel that every day when you're out and about with everybody else in the world?
Pretty much every day, because we are shorter. I mean, I used to be 6 foot and looked people square in the eye.
But is it something that affects you every day?
Emotionally, I've gotten past it, but it does, because people do look down at you, and most people are looking ahead. So a lot of times we're not seen. And, you know, we've got to make the crosswalks. We've got to make sure we look for curb cuts. We got to look for those things that we didn't give a lot of thought before we were in a wheelchair.
So how did you come to find the games?
Well, I was, one of my therapists indicated, and her name was Marie, she indicated that, you know, the wheelchair games might be a good way for you to keep up with your physical exercise, also to meet people your height. And lo and behold, it was just that. Something that gave me an opportunity to be out there and actually stay in shape and find a lot of things I could do.
Laura, you are nodding your head. You also were diagnosed with MS, right?
Yes.
You are Army.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us a little bit of your story?
I was 23 when I started having symptoms, and I, like Sonny, had primary progressive. And it was back in 1981, so there really weren't the MRI. It was a process of elimination for the diagnosis. And my doctors were, it actually was kind of cute. I was the youngest person at Fort Devens Hospital, and they were like, well, she's our terminal patient. I was like, well, I can't die from this disease, but they couldn't fix me.
Uh-huh.
And they got me involved in some experiments. So I had Cytoxin, chemotherapy, and corticosteroids.
For the MS.
For the MS, to help to keep it into, put me in remission, because I just kept going downhill, downhill. And knock on wood, I haven't had another lasting exacerbation since 1982 that has left me more disabled. However, I use a wheelchair, so I was medically retired from the military.
So, okay, so you were retired from the military, and I'm guessing you have experienced some of the same things that Sonny has done about, you know, being in the wheelchair, the height difference, because when he was talking, you were nodding your head.
The height difference actually kind of made me laugh, because I never really thought about that, except I have long leg braces, so I can stand up and see the dust on the top of my refrigerator. And you don't normally see that. I don't know. I was 24. I was medically retired. I was signed up for Social Security as I was being separated from the military. And I would describe the next 2 years of my life as existing. You know, I was healthy, somewhat healthy. I was disabled, but I was retired with better benefits than a 20-year vet.
That's so
I was
young.
Collecting Social Security like a 65-year-old person. And what do I – I'm 24. What do I do with the rest of my life?
So what happened then?
I was living in outside of Boston. That's where I was stationed. Mm-hmm. And friends of mine took me to the Boston Marathon. So we went. We sat at the corner right before the finish line. And we watched the first 12 competitors cross the line. And I turned around. I said, okay, we can go now. That's what I want to do. They were all in wheelchairs. So I came home and moved back here because my family lived in South Jersey. And found wheelchair sports through McGee Rehab, and got involved, tried out all kind of things, and gave me a reason to get out of bed in the morning.
All right, we'll get more fully into your story in just a little bit, but I do want to bring Sean into the conversation. Mentioned earlier on as we were introducing the show that you had been paralyzed. You were no longer paralyzed, but it affected your legs. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? And again, you two were you're Air Force.
Correct.
So okay.
Correct.
Your
yeah.
history, Sean.
Yeah, in the Air Force, I was a psychiatric specialist.
Mm-hmm.
So I was never in harm's way, you know, so to speak. My harm came when I came home. I got shot in my neighborhood when I got home mm-hmm. from a desert storm and was paralyzed initially from the waist down with a diagnosis that wasn't too positive, that I would not walk again. I still have a bullet on my spine. And but, you know, the doctors were wrong. Thank God. They were wrong. I did walk again. However, I still suffered some neurological damage and paralysis on my right knee down. And I wore a leg brace, and I was able to walk, you know, with the leg brace. It was up until just a few years ago that I got contracted MRSA in the bad leg in the hospital. Got an infection and eventually had to amputate. And that's what kind of led me to the wheelchair sports.
So you had the amputation, and then what happened? Did they reach out to you because you are a veteran? How did you find the wheelchair?
I was being cared for at the VA hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, there's several programs at the VA hospital. Kate Wiesbond is one of the she's like the activities coordinator there. And, you know, she just was feeding me all these possibilities because I was going through rehab and I guess I was exceeding the therapist's, you know, their plan for me. And I'm like, what else can you got? You know, what else you got? What else you got?
So emotionally, you were okay.
Oh, I was okay. I was okay. And because this is, you know, 20 years in the making, you know, it was the amputation was really, I had lost this leg a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so taking it off was just a matter of not seeing it anymore.
Sure.
But mentally, I was ready for it. I was prepared for it. But it still was challenging in and of itself not to see it there anymore.
Sure.
But
and you had played sports when you were younger?
Yeah. Yeah, I played sports. You know, I was an okay, you know, athlete at everything. I did everything. But I was like kind of the middle of the road kind of guy. But now I'm like the best. Now I'm like really good at everything.
You're going to tackle the game tomorrow. So, Sonny, were you into sports?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was an avid skier from age 26 up until I guess I stopped skiing in late 90s. And something I really loved to do. Also, I played baseball, football, a little sandlot this. I played high school football. And I just always like competing at whatever.
Yeah. And Laura?
Always involved in sports, school.
So a natural transition to the games.
Pretty much so, yeah.
So before we head to our break here in a moment or so, how does this work? Do you, if you express an interest in the games, do you then get involved with a specific program in your area to, you know, identify sports that you're interested in, and then you start training with whom? Am I getting that right? Sean?
Well, the VA really spearheads, you know, all of the vet games, you know, whether they're in another city. Last year they were in Tampa, and I wouldn't have known about it unless the VA had programs that, you know, would introduce it, you know, to you. So
you had to seek them out, though, or did they?
No, they sought me out because I was a patient, and they have these programs set up, you know, for, you know, you're discharged. Like, you're getting discharged, but there are all, you know, all these opportunities out there for you to rehab and get better and, you know, develop some skills, you know, in all these different areas. So that's how I found it. You know, they found me.
And so, Sonny, how did you determine what you were interested in as you were walking out the door?
Well, I guess initially it was Julia and also Bethany, the coaches that we had 2 years ago, that said, you know, you may very well want to try some things in this particular sport. Now, hand cycling, I picked up last year, and
what is hand cycling like?
Hand cycling is pedaling with your arms versus your legs. And it can be a challenge to go, because it's actually 10K, 6.2 miles of consistent cycling, and you really need to prepare for it.
I'd seen a picture of an athlete in, I guess, a hand cycle, and the gentleman was on his back.
Yes.
And the hand, I guess, cycling equipment was above him. Is that a standard hand cycle?
Well, that is the very fast one. That's an RX, and you're totally encumbered, basically laying down. I have something that's not quite as fast, and a Force 2, which sets you up a little bit more, but it's the same way that you pedal it, two hands going in the same direction. And if you can do that contiguously for about 25 minutes, you can run the race.
So is the equipment then tailored to the veteran?
Yes, it is, for the most part. The VA sets you up with it, and then you've got to get it fitted so it works for you, and the rest is you have to train.
Laura, is it open to any veteran who's interested?
Any veteran with a spinal cord injury or amputation that requires that they use a wheelchair.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm. And might I add the equipment, I also play basketball, and I wouldn't be able to play basketball without the VA purchasing the expensive equipment.
We'll get into that in just a moment because we're coming up on a break. The 34th Annual National Veterans Wheelchair Games are about to begin. Our guests in studio, Sean Johnson, is an Air Force veteran who will be participating in the games. Laura Schwanger is an Army veteran, and Sonny Wimberly is also Army and a Vietnam vet. Lines are open, 1-888-477-9499. Radio Times, we will be right back.
Holman Cadillac proudly supports WHYY. During Holman Cadillac Summer's Best event, over 200 of the season's collection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs are available for a test drive. More at Holman Cadillac on Route 73 in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, and online at HolmanCadillac.com.
Hi, I'm Stephen Quinn. Journalist Amanda Petrusic reveals the obsessive world of 78 RPM record collectors and how the largely white male demographic has changed our understanding of music history. That's coming up on Cue the Summer from PRI Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Say goodbye to the GE building at 30 Rockefeller Plaza. Say hello to the Comcast building. Well, to one New York art historian,
anything other than the RCA building sign is to me a certain kind of desecration of history. But history does get desecrated now and then.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Bad energy habits around the office can affect your bottom line. PICO Smart Ideas for your business can help with customized tips, information, and programs designed to save you energy and money. Learn more at pico.com/smartideas. PICO supports WHYY.
This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. In today for Marty Moskowain, we're talking about the 34th Annual National Veterans Wheelchair Games, which begin tomorrow here in the city of Philadelphia and also some parts of South Jersey. Our guest today, we've got three athletes from Team Philly Fever. Laura Schwanger is an Army veteran and also a Paralympian, which we'll get into in a little bit. Sean Johnson is Air Force, and Sonny Wimberly is also Army, and he is a Vietnam vet. Lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or a tweet at @WHYYRadioTimes. And Sean, before we went into the break, we started to talk a little bit about equipment and how you access equipment. Obviously, veterans, come from all sorts of financial backgrounds, but if somebody doesn't, have the funding, this equipment can be pretty expensive, right?
Absolutely. I played basketball, and those chairs can run up to as much as $4,000.
Let's talk about the type of chair. Well, how is the chair adapted to basketball?
They measure, it's custom to each player. Mm-hmm. It's definitely custom to each player, your length, your width, what's comforting to you as far as when you're rolling, and the people that will measure you, they know the game, so they know how you're going to need to move, and they just ask you, what are you comfortable with, this, are you comfortable with that, and so it's custom, so it costs a lot of money, but the VA has they flip the bill. They fit the bill for, the whole thing.
For anybody.
Anybody that's a veteran.
Yes.
Yeah, any veteran. Yeah, there's programs out there if you're not a veteran that will give you the opportunity to test the equipment or, and probably there's grants out there as well for those that aren't veterans to get equipment. But I was fortunate enough to be a veteran and to be taken care of by the VA.
So you mentioned the chair, cost about $4,000. Mm-hmm. And how does that compare to a standard wheelchair?
Well, I've never purchased a standard wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Sonny may be able to answer that question a little better.
A couple hundred dollars can get you a standard hospital push-around rubber tire wheelchair. Mm-hmm. But anybody that's been in a wheelchair for a while knows that that's not something you can use for sports. It's really not something you could use to get around too well, as far as just getting around like we do on a daily basis. So the chairs are normally custom made to your body and for you. And thank goodness the VA has foot the bill, and it's much appreciated by me.
So it doesn't move, it's not something that you're going to ride down the sidewalk in, but on a basketball court, do the wheels move? I mean, is it easier to handle?
It's much more, nimble. The wheels are on there on an outward angle. Some of them almost as much as 45 degrees.
And when I said that, I meant back and forth, side to side, as opposed to a regular wheelchair.
Exactly. I mean, you can go around in circles. It's made for, movement, lots of movement. And I actually take my chair out. You said you won't be going down the street. You might see me riding down the street in my basketball chair. I'll go to the mall and just ride, because it's a workout. Because you have to push. So I have a lot of fun in my chair.
Laura, let's talk about a little bit more of your personal history. You're also a breast cancer survivor.
Yes, ma'am.
And so was it after treatment that you started rowing?
I started rowing to gain back the strength that I had lost from all the surgery, the chemotherapy, and the radiation. I was probably the weakest I've ever been in my life.
How old were you when you were diagnosed?
I was 49. No, I was 48 when I was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. It was probably 8 months of treatment, and I was just totally wiped. I've always been an athlete. I had competed in 3 Paralympics and been on the national team for 12 years. So I was just going into the treatments very strong, mm-hmm. and then it just totally wiped me. It's probably the hardest thing I've ever done. And here in Philadelphia, we're a great big rowing town, so there's a very good adaptive rowing program here on the river. And the woman in charge. Wheelchair sports is a very small community. So if you're in one sport, people in other sports. And, Pennsylvania Center for Adaptive Sports does rowing and skiing and all this. So being a track and field athlete, Isabel would always say, come do this. I was like, no. And I finished my treatments in November of 2006. I was so weak, and she called me, and she caught me at a really weak moment mentally. She said, "Why don't you come out and do our indoor rowing?" She says, "You'll never know the boat is going slow because you're all on a little Concept 2 indoor rower. You'll just be rowing along with everyone else." And it's like, okay, I'll try that. And it got my strength back up. So after 4 months of rowing inside, the coach said, "You want to try rowing in a boat?" I said, "Sure, why not?" And 2008 was the first year that rowing was a Paralympic sport in Beijing, and I worked really, really hard. And there was a little girl, 17, very petite girl in a erg next to me, and I said, "Well, I can't let her beat me." So she was my incentive to really work hard and work hard, work hard. And I made the national team that year.
Are there a number of different people in the boat with you? Are you solo?
Oh, no. I row all by myself with just my arms and my shoulders. I have pontoons on the boat. I don't use my legs to slide the seat. So it's a very short stroke. You're strapped to the seat so I don't fall over or fall into the water.
And so that is how the boat is adapted differently?
Yes, yes, for my level of disability. Then there's, you know, for less disabled, there's different events.
And again, let's talk about funding. How do you afford something like this?
Funding is tough. I'm very happy and fortunate that I was a military veteran, because the VA does support adaptive sports and programs and equipment for us.
Sonny, you looked like you wanted to jump in.
Well, I know Laura. I've known Laura since I got into sport. And Laura is a super athlete.
Thank you, Sonny.
And anybody that comes out to see, just look for Laura, especially in the slalom. I'll tell you, she is awesome and an inspiration to all of us. I know to me she has been. But also want to talk about the ESP that we all need to work with. And that's the EPS, I'm sorry. It's the emotional, physical, and spiritual side of being disabled.
All right.
And the emotional side is something we really can't show that well, because we got to be tough, or we got to be something else, or nobody thinks about what they say or do.
Is that part of the military experience?
Well, it's not really part of the military experience. It's part of life's experience, mm-hmm. where you have this new thing to tackle, and many people can't see you tackling it because you don't look bad. I don't look that bad. Well, you can't see me on radio, but.
Yeah, no, you don't look bad at all.
It doesn't look like I'm going to the hospital tomorrow. So.
Sure.
But at any rate, I've got to deal with that emotional side every day. And I got to say, adaptive sports has been one of the things that's really helped me. The other side is, in the physical side, adaptive sports has helped. Again, the VA provides the equipment, and I put in the work, and this is part of the outcome. The next thing is the spiritual side, and I got to shout out to my church that supported me a whole way, Mount Hope United Methodist Church in Salem, New Jersey. Thanks for all you do, and all my supporters. And that was a number of them, from the Gun Club, Pine Valley Gun Club, great supporters. Also the Riders, the American Legion Riders out of Gibbsboro.
Support is so important. I did actually just want to jump in here because I got this note up on the screen here from our producer. There's a call from Warren from Philadelphia. I guess he's your first cousin, Sonny.
Yes, he is.
He's proud of you and he wishes you good luck. But the support of the crowd really is something that can help so many veterans. I see you nodding your head. John?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Last year was my first year at the Veterans Games in Tampa, and I was blown away by, you know, the sheer camaraderie and just the togetherness of everyone on the same, you know, everybody had the same goal in mind, and I didn't know what to expect, but before I left, I had more confidence, I had more friends, you know, and it kind of launched my whole passion towards the sports.
You know, as I was driving in to the station, and I crossed the bridge from South Jersey into Philadelphia to come into work, under the Ben Franklin Bridge, inevitably you're going to find people who happen to be homeless. And as we all know, that a number of homeless are veterans who have a hard time coping with their experience. And they look to be able-bodied. They're walking around for the most part. But you almost hope that there might be something like this for those who are mentally incapacitated as well, because sport can heal.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I think the VA has several programs to help, you know, any veteran in any, you know, any condition, any medical condition, you know, everything is available. Everything is available. With PTSD, you know how, you know, that's become the popular thing, but it's it's been around for, you know, ages. It's been around. So, and, you know, from my experience and having some friends that have PTSD, the VA still, you know, they can help them as well as they can help, you know, an athlete.
Okay. I do need to address the elephant in the room here. Just a quick question about the scandal at the Department of Veterans Affairs and, you know, some veterans waiting an average of 150 days for medical services. You know, you've needed medical services. Is this something that you've experienced?
I've never had that problem. When that came, when I heard about that, I was like, really? I was like, that must be really an isolated incident. Because I've never, ever had a problem. I've always gotten my appointments like within 2 weeks that I made them.
Yeah, and we're really here to promote what we can do and what the good things that are done by the VA here.
I've never had a problem either with anything I've needed from the VA. The VA has been there for me, and once again, we're here for the games and talk about that.
Fair enough. We are talking about the 34th Annual National Veterans Wheelchair Games, which get underway tomorrow in Philadelphia. And our guests today are Sean Johnson, who served in the Air Force and suffered an injury when he came home. We also have Laura Schwanger, who served in the Army and at age 24 was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And Sonny Wimberly was in the Army, served during the Vietnam War, and was also diagnosed with MS back in 2006. They're competitors. They're with Philly Fever. Our telephone number, by the way, is 1-888-477-9499. Lines are open here on Radio Times. You can also shoot us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let's talk about adaptive sports. Safe to say adaptive sports have exploded. The Sochi Paralympics were broadcast in large part by NBCSN, which is the NBC Sports Network. Laura, you are a Paralympian. We kind of alluded to that. You've been a Paralympian for a number of years. You started back when, in the late 1980s?
I made my first U.S. development team in 1987 and went on to make the team for Seoul, Korea in 1988.
And this was not rowing. This was
track
and field.
No, this was track and field. Yes,
well,
I did
events?
Shot put, discus, javelin, and pentathlon, which is shot put, discus, javelin, 200 meter and 1500 meter all in one day. So I did that in 88 in Seoul and 92 in Barcelona. And those 2 years, we weren't even sponsored by the U.S. Olympic Committee. We had to pay our own way, find funding, sponsorship, everything. By 1996, I was still doing the track and field. We went to Atlanta, and that was the first year that the USOC sponsored us. So we saw big movement then. And then I took a few years off, and I came back in Seoul, or in Beijing. And it was just amazing to see the difference. You know, there was funding, there was all kind of training stipends, and some of these kids that were competing, they had no idea that we had to pay our own way at times.
Back in the day. Why the change?
I think a lot of the changes, we were very vocal. Adaptive sports, we called it wheelchair sports at the time. We just got bigger and bigger and more vocal and more vocal. University of Illinois was an NCAA letter sport in basketball and track and field. A number of other colleges are now NCAA letter sports. And there's just more and more. The young kids get out involved, and you have to provide something for them. So there's more and more programs going on.
Where do you see adaptive sports 10 years down the road?
I think the sky's the limit. Right now, the Department of Defense, the VA, have put so much money into adaptive sports. They bought all the airline tickets for the last four Paralympics, winter and summer. There's stipends out there. Like, there'll be scouts out at these games looking for athletes at these games to potentially make national teams and represent the U.S. in future Paralympics.
So what the word adaptive sports, or the phrase, is a new one to me. What do you think of that phrase, Sean?
It's accurate, you know, because there are some adaptations that need to happen in order for us to compete. So it's realistic. I'd say we were still considered athletes and not adaptive athletes because you still have to perform, you know, with the adaptive equipment. And that's where the athleticism comes in.
Sonny, you look like you're agreeing.
Well, you have to see Sean play baseball. You know, we practiced in the park in recent time. I had hoped to play this year. Unfortunately, it conflicts with trap shooting, and trap shooting is my number one sport.
Not nine ball?
No, not nine ball. Trap shooting is the number one. Nine ball I like, but hand cycle and trap shooting are my two primes.
Yeah.
And what I look forward to, but...
I actually read that the stick is a little difficult to manipulate with nine ball from a wheelchair.
Yes, it is, because they don't change the height of the table. And normally what you have to do is use a bridge. Anything that's inside the table, if you can't line it up from the outside, you've got to use a bridge. And that makes it a little bit different. The rules are just a little different in nine ball, where the ball always has to hit your numbered ball. It always has to hit the rail. And I find it interesting, very interesting, and another challenge.
Now we've got another call, according to the producer, Larry in Philly, also a cousin of yours, Sonny, calling to offer his support tomorrow.
Wonderful again.
Thank you, Larry. You know, we'd mentioned a number of times that you served in Vietnam. So let's talk about age. There's no age limit to the games?
There is no age limit to the games, and you'll be so surprised. Mm. I mean, we have a team member that is 90 years old, and one of the most wonderful...
This is on Philly Fever?
Oh, yeah. On Philly Fever, her name is Doris Morrell, and Doris is another major inspiration to all of us, and you'll see her as she is very vocal. Unfortunately, this year, she lost her son, and we all...
So sorry.
And we all think about that, and we'll all be in support of her. But that lady will definitely be in the front row with all of us.
All right. So she's not playing. She's going to be.
Oh, no. She is going to compete. If Doris comes here, she's going to compete. I mean, she competes.
What is her sport?
Swimming is one. I know she does. She has a power chair. So she does do the power chair racing. And I'm not sure what other sport she's in this year. But wherever she is, she's going to be the queen of the ball.
And again, it's open to everybody. Admission is free. Mm-hmm. So if it's, you know, it's the middle of the summertime, and if you're trying to figure out something fun to do, there are venues all across Philadelphia. The Pennsylvania Convention Center is a big one, and also in South Jersey. All right, we're talking about the 34th Annual National Veterans Wheelchair Games, which begin tomorrow. We've got three athletes from Team Philly Fever. Sean Johnson is Air Force. Sonny Wimberly, as we just mentioned, a Vietnam vet, served in the Army. And Laura Schwanger is an Army veteran as well. Lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Or you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or a tweet, WHYY Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. The conversation continues in just a moment here on Radio Times.
The Philadelphia Folk Festival proudly supports WHYY. This year's festival presents Old Crow Medicine Show, Jason Isbell, Janice Ian, Loudon Wainwright III, Natalie McMaster, Tempest, The Lone Bellow, Tommy Emmanuel, Sarah Jaroche, and many more. For a weekend of concerts, crafts, kids' activities, and camping, it's the Philadelphia Folk Festival, August 14th through the 17th on the Old Pool Farm in Upper Salford. For tickets and festival information, 800-556-FOLK or folkfest.org.
On a November morning in 1979, computers at the Underground Command Center of the Strategic Air Command sent an alarming message.
Suddenly, the screens were filled with images of a major Soviet attack on the United States.
It turned out to be a false alarm, but it wasn't the only one. On the next Fresh Air, Eric Schlosser discusses his book, Command and Control. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
What is wisdom? It's said we gain wisdom as we age, but as we age, our cognitive ability declines. So what's the answer? Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, we'll talk about wisdom as we age. What it is, how to gain it, how to use it, and how to keep it. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in today for Marty Moscowane. And we're talking about the 34th Annual National Veterans Wheelchair Games. They happen to be set this year in Philadelphia and parts of South Jersey. We've got three athletes from Team Philly Fever in studio with us. Laura Schwanger, an Army veteran and also a Paralympian. Sonny Wimberly is also Army and a Vietnam vet. And Sean Johnson is Air Force. And we were talking about, during the break, talking a little bit about training and what goes into some of these events. And Sean, you mentioned again that your sport is basketball, and you've medaled before, right? You're relatively late to the games. You've medaled before, and I'm guessing, of course, you're hoping to medal again. So what goes into your training?
Yeah, well, the first year in Tampa, I got a medal. I got a gold medal in basketball, gold in softball, and a bronze in shot put. And my training basically consists of swimming. I do a lot of swimming.
Every day? Every other day?
Well, when I'm doing it when I should, it's about 4 days a week. It's about 4 days a week. And some weight training, some small weight training. And practice with my basketball team. I play for, here in the city, I play for the McGee Spokesman. Mm-hmm. So we practice once a week, and we have tournaments and stuff that keeps me in shape all year long, you know, for the games. So coming to the games, I'm already in shape and I'm ready to go.
How about food?
I eat it, a lot of it. Is that your question?
You're not picky. You're not nuking the carbs, or you're not adding the carbs. It's just whatever.
I'm getting better. I'm getting better at that, because the less weight, the less I have to push. Okay. So, you know, the more nimble I can be. So I'm getting better at that. I have a new regimen that's in place that seems to be working out. But, you know, I'll still do a burger or two, you know, every now and then. Cheesesteak. This is Philly. I got to do cheesesteaks.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sonny?
Well, you speak about the training side. I'm very fortunate to have places like Shoal Physical Therapy that has been my supporter for the last 8 years, actually. And it helps me keep my weight down. And 2 days a week, almost religiously, I go to physical therapy. So this year, I've had a training regimen that involved 6 days of the week. I had two cycle days, two shooting days, and 2 days at therapy.
And how does that affect your illness, the MS?
I don't notice the illness.
Has it staved it off?
Well,
or symptoms?
I'm in pain 24/7, no matter what. And it's something you have to learn to live with. Yeah, I have chronic back pain as well. A few other things I care not to mention. But I learned to live with it. I live with it very well. And understand, if I get up out of the bed, thank God, I can go. And there's one other person I've got to thank, and that is my life partner and a wonderful person and my main coach, Roxanne Wimberly, who has been there all the time. And I couldn't do this, any of it, without her.
Again, support is so important.
More support, and the support is so important. And I'm just so, so appreciative to have it.
So before we get to the phones, Laura, I did want to talk to you a little bit about, I'm always interested in this because athletes can be so focused on what they put into their bodies in order to perform at a top-notch level. When you were at the peak as a Paralympian?
When I was training for Paralympics, I would train 6 days a week, very seriously. Having MS, I would always have to watch how much I worked out and what kind of recovery. So I kept a log of everything, and I knew if I did a heavy workout, I needed this amount of time for recovery. And I had support. I had coaches that helped me to deal with that. When I trained for Beijing and rowing, I was on the water twice a day, and the coach would look at me in the morning, and she'd say, well, we're not doing that workout. We're doing something different. And, you know, I was very fortunate. I've gotten older. I'm now 55. I have scars all over my body from abusing my body. So now I've taken it a little bit easier. But I still get out on my hand cycle a couple days a week. I started, you have to be smarter. You train smarter as you get older. So I started a CrossFit program over at Force One in West Deptford while I'm up here. And it's like the big rage, the CrossFit workout. Yeah. But the gentleman I worked with, the owner of the company, he has like modeled private programming for me. And you know, I sweat, I feel good, I go back the next day for another workout.
And again,
it's a lot of fun.
Again, this affects the symptoms of your MS how, if at all?
It could show up as far as like fatigue. I have optic neuritis issues, so I could have double vision, things like that. And to stave those off, I keep track of what I do, what I eat. I've been spending the last 4 years in Florida, and Florida has horrible pizza. So as far as food is concerned, while I'm up here visiting my family, I'm eating as much Italian and pizza as I can possibly find.
All right.
Okay. Carbo load.
To the phones we go. No, excuse me, Joanne in Chadsford, Pennsylvania. Welcome to Radio Times. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think it would be a really, really wonderful world if these athletes were paid for their service and their talents the way that commercial athletes are. While I'm delighted that all of them have found healing in sports, I just think the dedication and commitment go beyond the game and the egos, and I think it would be amazing if they were paid and compensated for their service. And I just think that would really help some of the veterans that are struggling right now.
Thank you, Joanne, for the call. Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice. Yeah. That would be very nice.
I would come out of retirement.
Yes, I was just going to say, I noted that you are retired. You know, 55, I mean, you know, the sky is the limit here with these sports. Do you ever get the itch to compete again, Laura?
Yes, I do. Next year for Brazil, kayaks can... Sprint kayak and canoe is a new Paralympic sport, and the national coach is in Florida. So I've been to a couple of clinics, and she's like, "Oh, you got it. You got to come out." So this year,
really?
So I know. I think about it, and then it's like, "Oh God, do I really want to train like that?" Because when I do train for that, that's all I do.
Sure.
The year of from 2007 to 2008 to that September of the Beijing, that's all I did. I went on vacation and I found a gym. And people were like, but you're on vacation. It's like, I'm training for the Olympics. I'm training for the Paralympics. I'm training.
So what is it like on the podium? As we mentioned, you medaled how many times?
I'm happy to say, I'm very proud that I have entered a total of 12 Paralympic events over 4 different Paralympics, and I have 12 Paralympic medals hanging
wow.
in my house.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So what is it like on the podium?
The podium is just absolutely incredible. To sit there and have a gold medal put around your neck and then to hear the national anthem. My God, I'm getting goosebumps just now thinking about it. Opening ceremonies is just... I don't know that I could describe it and give it justice to come out of underneath the tunnel, come out into the jam-packed standing room only stadium and walk around in the athletes parade. And I'll tell you, I had friends that were like 300-pound weightlifters and shot putters, and to look over and see tears coming down their eyes. You know, it's...
Wow.
It's worth every day at the gym.
Well, Laura Schwanger, who is retired in quotes, will be watching in a year or so. I think it's 2 years down the road for the Paralympics in Rio. So have you ever hit the wall in an event where you felt as if you just can't go on anymore, Sonny?
I've never hit the wall, really. It just feels like the more I put in, the more I can get out of it.
The hand cycling, there's never been a point where you just felt that you can't do another lap.
No, I haven't. I've been real fortunate. I haven't really. And I've got a good buddy who's also on our team and also a hand cyclist and a guy that's got me kind of into it, Bruce Husted. Actually, it's pronounced Husted. I'll get that right, Bruce. And being a buddy, we get together and it's more like we're just out for a cruise and having fun. But actually, we normally would put in 6 miles just playing. So hopefully we'll be ready for the challenge with the hand cycles.
And Laura,
hitting
the wall, especially with rowing, is such a tough sport. How do you fight to get through that?
The finals of the Paralympics, there were 6 boats, and I did the first 250. Our race was 1,000 meters, first 250 meters. I looked up, and there was only one woman behind me, which put me in 5th place. And I said to myself, you know, I'm not coming back next another 4 years. This is it. It's time to do it. So, you know, I totally avoided the race plan and just pulled as hard as I could. And I could see two people, and then I could see three people, and there was less than 200 meters to go in the race, and it was like, you just got to keep going, keep going, keep going. And I actually had negative splits, which is the best way to race. I was faster at the end. And the two women, I came in third. The two women who beat me were half my age, and the officials had to come over and pull my boat because I left everything on the water.
Wow, what a feeling.
Yeah.
So do you think your military background helped you through that or affected you in any way?
I think we tend not to give up. We'll keep pushing and pushing and pushing because our buddies, our unit mates, they need us. So we keep going and we keep going and we keep going. And you'll see that in a lot of the team sports here. Mm-hmm. I can't not give 100% because they need me.
Sonny?
I have to agree with her. And once again, when you see Laura compete, it makes you think twice about your event and what you're going to put into it. And you'll see so many people put their all into it, no matter what their all is, whether it's the next push on the hand on the wheelchair to get a little bit faster, whether it's just to break that sweat that you really can't stop. No matter what it is, you'll see our teammates screaming for one another, and that means don't give up. You can't give up no matter what. Just go, go, go. And I'm hoping nobody burst their heart this year, but I know they'll put everything they got into it.
We talked about how you are members of Team Philly Fever and that there are different sports, different people involved in the team. How does the team operate then within the larger wheelchair games? Do you rack up points? Does one team come out ahead at the end of the day, Sean?
No, it's more of a communal team. You know, it's a more of a support system since we all are scattered amongst, you know, all the events. So it's more, you know, this is my team. This is, you know, this is my nucleus, you know, because we compete and sometimes we scatter and compete, but we always come back together at some point. And we go to each other's events and we support each other that way. So I think, you know, that way. And in the whole build up to the games, you know, we've had several meetings, you know, and so we talk outside of, you know, the sports and, you know, we're like a family.
How many men, how many women on Philly Fever? Anybody know offhand?
I know there's three women, so that leaves, what,
rest.
11 men.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been really fortunate here in Philly that two of the rec therapists that got involved as our coaches, mm-hmm. really more as managers to organize everything, have been just so incredibly perky and bubbly and everything, and they keep everybody apprised of what's going on, what events our fellow teammates are competing in and when, and we can come out and cheer them on. And all the subsequent coaches have continued this.
So opening ceremonies are tomorrow. What are the opening ceremonies like? Is there a parade of veterans?
It is the parade of veterans. It is, Laura put it, you know, will there be a dry eye there at the end of it? It depends on the narrator. But then, too, to see 600 guys or people, as you were, men and women, in wheelchairs, entering whatever venue there is, with the music, the national anthem, the everything from the lighting to the spokespeople to knowing what's going to happen after we light that torch. We're all going to go at one another like the Eagles would go at Dallas. I'll put it that way.
Maybe not that much hate.
Well, not hate, but we're going to be as competitive as we can be.
Absolutely.
And we know, and if you do it a couple years, you get to know the athletes are going to come from Pittsburgh. I know a couple of athletes coming from Hawaii. I know the guys from the UK. I know the guys from Puerto Rico. And everybody that's going to be on the line at trap shooting, you kind of get to know those guys. So, and you know, in Philadelphia, we talk a little smack. I'm not going to say anything today, but we do that. But I'm looking for the guys from Kentucky and the guys from Missouri that come in with all the windage and all the good ideas.
There are also people from the United Kingdom participating, correct? How does that work? So it's not just veterans from the U.S. How did the United Kingdom get involved?
I guess they've just been a part of it year after year. Maybe Laura could give you more.
I can't remember when they started coming. It's probably been 15 years since they've been. We initially invited them to come over, and there's been a group has come over and represented them.
And so, what is the feeling between the two countries? It's
a lot of trash talk. Nighttime, you know, a lot of socializing at the end of the day, and it's really a lot of fun.
And this organization, by the way, relies in a large part on volunteers, correct?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, how many do you know offhand, the number of people that is needed? And again, thinking, you know, of summer and if people, you know, are looking for really fun, interesting, compelling things to do, you have to be, I think, 14 or over to jump in, right?
Right.
I believe so. And was the number, was it 1,500 that they needed?
Oh, I'm thinking it's in excess of 3,000 that we eventually have over the whole time.
Okay, actually, I see on the screen here 2,500 volunteers. So it's a huge amount.
But, can't do it without them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Can't do it.
All right. Well, let the games begin. The 34th National Veterans Wheelchair Games begin tomorrow in the Philadelphia area. Pennsylvania Convention Center, I think, is the major spot, but I think you can go online and check out the other venues. I know there are a number in South Jersey, as we mentioned. Our guests this hour have been our members of the Philly Fever team. Sean Johnson, an Air Force veteran. Thank you so much for joining us, Sean.
Thank you, Mary.
Good luck. Laura Schwanger's an Army vet. Great to meet you, Laura.
Thank you.
We'll be watching for you. Thank you. And Sonny Wimberly is also Army and a Vietnam veteran. Thank you so much, Sonny, and good luck.
Thank you, Mary. We'll do our best.
All right. The engineer for today's show is Kevin Griffin. Radio Times is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. And Ariel Plotnick is our intern. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, filling in for Marty Moskowain. Marty is back tomorrow. Thank you so much for joining us.